When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's hard to believe now, but Elvis wasn't always the king. By 1968, he had fallen out of the music spotlight for a decade. He'd only performed once since getting out of the army in 1960, and most of his time was spent turning out dozens of B-level movies that left him frustrated with his career. Then his manager and infamous jerk, Colonel Tom Parker, pitched an idea to NBC to have Elvis do a TV special. Presley took the stage in a black leather outfit and reminded everyone that he was the king of rock and roll. In this week's episode, we're taking a close look at Elvis's 1968 comeback special. We're going to talk about his career before and after the event, play some of our favorite clips, and discuss why this show was such an important moment in rock and roll.
Looking for trouble? You came to the right place. Looking for trouble? Just look right in my face. I was born standing up and talking back. My daddy was a green-eyed man to judge me because I'm evil.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Prisoners of Rock and Roll, episode number 37. Thanks for listening. My name is Bruce Kramer, and I'm so happy to get to spend the next hour and a half to 2 hours talking about music with my two co-hosts and good friends, the Hunka Hunka Burning Love, Ryan McCusker, and the Hound Dog, Doug McCusker.
Watch out, man. Are you rocking?
He ain't never caught a rabbit, but he's still a good friend of mine. Hmm. You can do anything, but don't step on our blue suede shoes. Speaking of Ryan, you look awesome in your 70 Elvis jumpsuit tonight.
Thank you, baby. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you much, baby.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll, sponsored by McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia, and we are so happy to be part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Man, tonight we're talking about the Elvis 1968 comeback special. It's a huge moment of rock and roll, and this has been on our topic list for like 6 months.
Elvis is the king of rock and roll. This is when one of his most shining moments in his career. You know, like, he showed up, and you're like, I am the rock and roll, yeah. King of rock and roll.
And I said about Ryan wearing the jumpsuit, Doug, you were actually wearing
a
50th anniversary Elvis comeback special t-shirt.
We got it in Graceland, like, a couple years ago. But, like, yeah, like you're saying, like Ryan was saying, this is probably one of the most important live television broadcasts of all time. Not that it was live, but, like, it was very, very important as time went on.
Do you think, like, casual music fans know what we're going to talk about?
Elvis fans either. Know what we're talking about. I mean, I don't expect the regular fan to know what we're talking about.
I think the clips are very recognizable with him in the leather jumpsuit.
Yeah, and it's very recognizable.
Yeah, you know, so I think more people like know that Elvis in the leather jumpsuit and what it is, but don't know exactly what it's from.
I don't know if people know, like, you know, you go from Ed Sullivan Elvis to Fat Elvis.
Yeah.
And I don't know if people really understand the connection, like what happened.
This is like middle
times.
Elvis. This is like, you know, like,
this is the second act of his, like, it's a three act show, right? Yeah. It was the beginning, and then it was this, and then the
and
the
I
Vegas.
Think this was his best moment in his career. You know, he was slim. He was the leather outfit. He had the red guitar. He was in the boxing ring, you know, with his boys playing acoustic with him. The crowd was around him. I mean, and he shined. He shined like a diamond. Yeah. You cannot watch that and be like, this is not a magic moment in music history right now.
They said that Elvis was like very nervous going into this, even putting on the leather suit, because he dropped a ton of weight.
Yeah, he went on like on vacation.
He went on vacation.
Got tan, like, and
yeah. And he did it a few times in career. He did it for the Aloha special. He did that for also. He got in shape and everything like that. And he was he was not sure of himself, you know, because he hasn't performed in front of people in like 10 years.
Yeah. He comes out and he's like shaking like a leaf.
Yeah.
And it's like his boys are there and they're kind of like, all right, Elvis, jump on in here. The water's fine, son. Just come on. Here we're going to do this. A one, a two, three. And they force him to start playing. And then he's getting more relaxed and relaxed and relaxed as that show goes on.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Right? Because you'd think that he's Elvis, right?
But he's so far removed. He's that he's that movie actor now, or whatever you want to call him. Like Hollywood.
He was making all those bad movies.
Yeah. He's so far away from performing in front of from front of a crowd. I guess he just forgot who he was, you know?
Which is like, it's crazy to even think that. And this episode is going to be a lot of fun for me because out of the three of us, I'm admittedly the smallest Elvis fan. I was never like huge into him. It was like when my wife and I started dating, she said something about Elvis. I'm like, yeah, I'm not a huge fan. And she was like, what?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Wow.
This was the one episode too, when we were doing the research and I was watching some stuff. She was enjoying it because she was like, Elvis at that era was very, very handsome.
Absolutely. Yeah. He had like movie star looks and he had the talent.
Sure.
I'll tell you what though. The first time I went to Graceland, I went by myself. So I've been to the White House and I've been to Buckingham Palace. So I'm like, let me go to one of the other famous houses in the world. Let me go to Graceland.
Sure.
Going there, I was not the biggest fan. Of course, like, you know, growing up in the household, me and Ryan did and all that. Like, Elvis was always around, but not like a huge fan I am today. Dude, you get there and you can't help but leave an Elvis fan. You just get taken over by it.
Yeah, that moment when you kind of like, when you go through the whole tour and you go outside and you swing around that, like by the outdoor, the courtyard and stuff, and then you see his grave, and it's kind of like, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, it's deep.
And it's not even if like you don't have the reaction seeing it, seeing the other people. I think I mentioned this before. The one year that I went, it was actually like Elvis weekend. It was the anniversary of his death.
So timing,
everybody there was like dressed up. And
wow.
It just happened to
Must have been awesome.
It was just random that we're walking in. We're like, why the fuck is everybody dressed up?
Did the flying saucer come flying down?
Right. It was kind of like when we went to like the opening night of like Star Wars and everybody was dressed up. Mm. I'm like, what is going on here?
So after that experience, did you find yourself like – relating to Elvis's music a little bit more after being the Graceland in Memphis and all that? Or
I did. I mean, I've never I've always appreciated what he means culturally.
Sure.
You know, I've never been like, he sucks. I've been like, I like his really early stuff because I tend to really like that Sun Records sound.
Yeah.
And then as he got like the, even as we dive into the show, there's parts of this that I was kind of like, eh.
Yeah,
like,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, you know, like the stand-up stuff with the orchestra behind it. I was kind of like, dude, give me the raw, the guitar.
Yeah.
I think this acoustic stuff that he does is my favorite shit that he's ever recorded.
But it's kind of funny, though. You see him with the stand-up version, like the sit-down part and then the stand-up part. That stand-up part led up until, I think, was it like in July of the next year? That's when he started doing Vegas and all that.
Yeah.
You know, so this was like the beginning of all that.
Yeah, it definitely led to hit that.
I thought he was rocking during those times he was standing up with the band. Like, I thought that was when his most moment that he shined was when him alone with the guitar in the boxing ring and all the girls are on the sides. And he's like bending down and playing to one of them, and they're screaming their heads off.
That's cool. I mean, like the stuff where like the it's real 70s sounding, man. Like strings are behind. Oh, yeah. I guess we'll go part by part through it.
No, he does Memories, and it sounds real 60s, like orchestra in the background.
Yeah. So I think maybe before we dive into the special, man, we're going to talk a little bit maybe about like what was leading up. We'll talk about what was going on in music. We'll talk about what was going on with Elvis. And then maybe we'll talk about kind of how the whole program came together. And then we're going to walk through it a little bit. So as always, we're probably going to talk for 2 hours about everything, but that's what we're here, man. We're here to entertain
and
educate.
We're going to talk 2 hours about a special that was an hour.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if you really want to learn about like Elvis getting started, go back and listen to episode 4 that we did on the history of Sun Records. We talked about Elvis
a lot. We could have made another Elvis episode, like the same old story, same old thing with Elvis. But, you know, we decided let's do something different.
We're going to zoom in and take a really narrow look at one important part of his career. But, you know, you talk about like how meteoric his rise was. So he goes on TV in 56. And then, you know, everybody knows that, right? Mm-hmm, that he's on Ed Sullivan. He's shaking his hips. He scares the shit out of everybody. And then he goes in the Army in 58. So it's like 2 years, dude, and he's out.
He's gone.
He's gone.
Yeah.
And he was like, just think of anybody. I don't know. Think of like Taylor Swift did that. It's not like he died, right? It's not like Kurt Cobain passed away or Buddy Holly died. Like, he went into the Army, so he's like alive, but he's just gone.
It was a different time, though. You have to remember, like, even in World War II, the baseball players were stopped playing ball.
Yeah.
You know, this was a different time. You had to go in and give your 2 years. It was like he got drafted. That's what happened.
Right.
You know,
no, that's a good point.
That's what happens.
That it was more part of culture that people.
It was a different time.
Right.
But, but the colonel totally cashed in on that. He's like, great, awesome. Like, we're going to take you away for 2 years, put in the army, and this, then, that, blah, blah, blah. And then you come back, and then we're going to exploit you.
Yeah.
You
know? And we'll get to that piece of shit. And he's in the next, actually, the next paragraph of my notes. But so Elvis, and he gets out of the army in 60, and he only performs once. And between then and the comeback special in 68. And that was, I think, was it the Arizona Memorial and Pearl Harbor?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Okay.
Yes.
And then, so, it's funny, man. Like, by the time he does a 68 special, his wife goes, I've never seen you perform live.
Yeah.
She's never seen him in concert.
Yeah.
Which is just like, that just blows your mind.
Well, she was so young. How was she?
Right. But then, sorry. So legendary piece of shit. And I wanted to call him a piece of shit in a monologue, but I didn't because we cut that out and we put it on all of our social media. Tom Parker. So Tom Parker is a colonel the way that Colonel Sanders is a colonel, the way that Captain Crunch is a captain. He actually got it from a governor. I think it was like Arkansas, gave him an honorary title in the National Guard because he helped get the guy elected. But anyway, so Elvis gets out and he pushes Elvis into making movies. And in the 60s, Elvis made 27 films. So that's just pick any actor that you want and imagine if he did three movies a year for a decade.
I think like in a whole career, DiCaprio made 27 movies.
Right. Yeah. Right. And most of the movies made money, but people didn't think
they were really crappy movies.
People didn't think highly of them.
Yeah. They were just throwing him in stuff and just, you know, like the colonel's like, how much money are you gonna give me for this? Okay, here you go.
You're a speedboat racer.
That's cool.
You're a helicopter pilot.
Right. And the movies became like a factory. So the producers started condensing the schedule down and they would shoot everything on set because they wanted to make them faster and faster because the movies would so the colonel wanted them to do this because the movies Elvis would only make soundtracks for the movies.
Right.
So then the movies would promote the soundtracks and the soundtracks would promote the movies and it was just like this cycle.
The songs that they were picking.
Dude, and I think like after he did this he got that taste of like playing live again. The colonel had him in, like on set another movie a month later.
Like within a week, yeah.
Like within a week or something like that.
So I listened to a couple of the soundtracks and Elvis is slow as it started going on, Elvis was getting more and more frustrated. The quality of the movies was getting getting worse. The guy that was like the producer who did a whole bunch of these movies, he got so frustrated. He was like, I'm out. And he just, he canceled his contract and just walked. He's like, I'm not working with Elvis anymore. But I did, I listened to a couple of the soundtrack songs that he wrote. And I'm going to play a little bit of one. This is Do the Clam.
I love this song.
Dude, it's
awful. This is a good song.
It's a good song.
Come on.
This is one of the better ones.
Hey, everybody, gather around. Listen to that bongo sound. Grab the first one in your reach. Now we're going to shake the beach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do the clam. Do the clam. Grab your barefoot baby.
Come on, you guys like that. I think it's cheesy.
I see that scene in my head. But that's the thing. It's like I hear that and I see him dancing around on the beach. Like when I hear the Sound of Music song, I see what's her name dancing in the fields.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, so the movies he puts out, there's a couple outliers. Like Viva Las Vegas got a lot of attention.
Yeah.
But the movies generally get worse and worse. Dude. Yeah.
Jailhouse Rock's a good one. King Creole is a good movie. Viva Las Vegas is a good movie because of Anne Margaret.
Was Jailhouse Rock made before he went into the army?
I thought it was.
Yeah, I think it was too.
And so, all right, so you guys named
Black and White.
You named three of the 27 he made in the 60s.
Well, Anne loves the Habit one, like whatever. We were talking at dinner night, I'm like, I know it's your favorite film. Like, you know, how is this taken? He convinced a nun not to be a nun anymore. You know, like, this sounds really wholesome, like, entertainment for family.
Hey, baby.
That's what she says. Like, hey, it's Elvis.
It's like if he was alive now, it would just be just churning out, like, Netflix or Hallmark
Christmas
movies.
That's where we're at now, man.
Is that level of, like, kind of. Right. The Hallmark Christmas film is probably a good,
like Billy Ray Cyrus.
Yeah, just churning out just garbage. But, and I also think a little bit about, like, what was going on in music at the time. So I looked a little bit around, like, all the guys that Elvis came up with. So 57, Jerry Lee Lewis, he's out. Because he got busted for marrying his cousin. Little Richard goes, like, he becomes a preacher. in 57. Buddy Holly dies in 59. Chuck Berry goes to jail in 59. So all those are like, that's within 2 years of like rock and roll starting.
Sure.
So by now, by like 1959, 1960, man, Elvis is kind of like the dinosaur that's still around, right?
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
how fast music changed.
In rock and roll, you know, 5 years is a long time.
Sure.
Around.
Sure. Right. You know? And then all this change, and then he goes in the army.
Yeah.
Right. And then by the time he comes out, man, it's like, the world is like, so you got between then and 68, so you got Motown has started, the Beatles, the Stones, the Who, Hendrix, the Beach Boys, all are around. The Monterey Pop Festival happened, the Summer of Love. You get the riots in Chicago, and then like JFK, RFK, and MLK are all assassinated. But yeah, you know, by the time he goes into the army, by the time he does his show, America has completely changed.
Like, you know, the innocence of America has changed.
Yeah, dude, like that American Pie episode we did. Yeah, it's all gone.
Yeah, like during Vietnam's going on. Everybody's confused what's going on.
Yeah, you know, Bobby Sox and the drive-ins and all that shit, man, it's all over.
Yeah.
It's just, it's crazy.
In 10 years, though, too, you know, just think 10 years, it just changed.
That's a lot. Like, that's a long time,
you
though.
You know, from like getting transistor radio to walking on the moon.
Yeah.
You have to think.
It
was like that big, not the Industrial Revolution, but like it was like the after industrial. This is the baby boomer thing going on. The country was evolving. Like you had the media, you had the news. Like, you know what I mean? You had Vietnam on TV. So people didn't have the blinders on anymore. So how could you like really take Elvis Presley serious at that point?
You know, he did all those crappy movies.
Exactly.
But here he is on the special.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to rock out.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to truly rock out that I haven't done in like 10 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think maybe before we go any further though, I do need to hit the shit bag of the week for Colonel Tom Parker.
Yeah, let's get out of the way.
We're going to play this several times.
Let's officially do this.
Yeah.
Colonel Tom Parker. Shit
bag of the week.
Dun, dun, dun. We were talking as we were setting up, man, like that movie that's coming out and Tom Hanks is playing him. And I hope they don't whitewash that. Like what a piece of shit he is.
I could see Tom Hanks playing it to the
play straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a way too interesting character not to play straight.
Yeah.
He's a very interesting dude.
Yeah. We could do a whole.
He was a carny. Yeah. He was a carny. Yeah. You know, he didn't have a birth certificate. He didn't have a visa.
Yeah,
he didn't have anything.
Yeah.
He was a huckster. He was a grifter. He was just a.
What was he was when he was a carny? What we were talking about?
His sideshow. He would tell people to come pay him money to see the dancing chicken.
Right.
And people would come in and see the chicken, and he had a chicken, and underneath the little area it stood was a hot plate, and he would turn the hot plate on, so the chicken would start getting burnt on the feet, so it would start jumping up and down, and he would charge people.
He bought that from another carny.
He didn't come up with that.
That's an old trick.
Yeah, that's an old carny trick. Yeah, but he bought that from off another guy. He's like, I want to buy it off you.
Yeah. There's a couple of YouTube like documentaries about him. I started watching, and I ran out of time this week before we did the show. But
it's like he was all about selling merchandise.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, saw that as free money. He's like, okay, we could put the show on, but hey, I'm going to sell these fans. I'm going to sell these paper, whatever, and, you know, make money in between the songs. I hope they show the real him in the movie, man.
Yeah, I hope so, too. So, I mean, so let's talk about a little bit about maybe leading up the idea for the show. So, Tom Parker has this brilliant idea that he's going to get Elvis back in the spotlight by doing a Christmas special. And he goes to NBC and he's like, all right, we want you to do a – he's like, I want him to do a Christmas special, kind of like an Andy Williams kind of thing. He's like, he wanted Elvis in a powder blue tuxedo, lip syncing Christmas songs. He already had like mock-up of like the artwork already done. And as part of the deal, NBC then also had to, in addition to paying Tom Parker for Elvis, he had to agree to bankroll another movie.
Wow.
And, you know, again, he's always playing a fucking angle.
I'm sure he walked away with more money than anybody.
I'm sure he did. Yeah. I mean, they said he made more money off of Elvis than Elvis did.
Oh, God. The cash alone that he made off of him.
They originally said, I watched a video on YouTube. I forget the guy's name, but he worked for NBC. He was like one of the head producers to get it done. So the colonel reaches out to him. I can't remember his name. I wish I did. And he's like, well, just bring some like French pastries in a set. He's like, all right, we're going to sit down and have coffee and talk this out. The guy walks in with a bag of French pastries, takes the bag out of his hand, throws it in his briefcase, closes it. And he's like, all right, how much money am I going to make off this? He was a pig.
He was
that's
a pig.
Exactly good. That's the best word you could possibly use. He's a pig.
But look what he did. The smart thing that the colonel did was, if you want to see Elvis, you have to pay to see Elvis.
Sure.
that's what he did all those years, you know, and this was the first free thing that Elvis did in 10 years, you know, like to play a free TV show for basically free for people on watching at home.
Yeah. You know? And the Colonel just wanted to get him back to sell more records and make more money. There's no give a shitness about like managing his career and what he means and what, you know, what is his image turned into or anything else.
I think Elvis saw it as, here comes an opportunity for me to flex my muscles.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think eventually he did, but Elvis wasn't really sold on the idea because he always thought that they always made fun of him on TV. They made him, like, sing to a hound dog and do this and do that, you know?
Yes.
So he was really, like, I'm really afraid what they're going to – they were never really – they always, like, filled me from up to here. So I'm kind of, like, portrayed as a joke, basically.
No, that's a great point. I read that, too. Because he does go on the one – Ed Sullivan or something, and he's literally singing to a dog.
What was the name of the producer of the 68 show?
Steve Binder.
He was a smart dude.
Yeah,
he had the vision of turning Elvis back into this rock and roll icon.
Yeah, so Steve Binder signs on to the project as the director, and he said he saw it as an opportunity for Elvis to do something really special. And he said he was talking to Elvis before the show and was like, dude, you got to do this. And Elvis is like, hey, man, can I ask you an honest question? What do you think of my career?
Yeah,
and Steve Binder said, it's in the toilet.
Yeah, and he started laughing.
And Elvis laughed and said, well, I appreciate you being straight with
me. It's like somebody's kissing my ass.
Yeah. And I wrote the quote down. So Elvis said, what if I bomb? And he said, Elvis, you'll still be remembered for your movies and your early hit records. if it's successful, every door that was closed to you will reopen again, which is exactly what we did. And they said the whole time, like, Tom Parker was just, like, arguing. He's like, no, we're not going to do this. Like, all right, well, let's do some Christmas stuff at the end. Like, he just kept giving ground.
He's looking for a gimmick.
Yeah, he's looking to sell Christmas albums or something.
Right. So this dude signs on, and there's another important guy that they bring on. This guy, Bellew, B-E-L-E-W. I should have looked up how to pronounce his name, but he's a costume designer. And he goes, Binder convinces the dude to come on, and he tells Elvis, like, you know, you can't just come out in, like, normal clothes. You got to wear the whole leather. And if you watch the video, he's in a full or leather jacket, no shirt underneath, leather pants, the real high collar. I mean, it's like an iconic, and he gets like progressively sweatier as the show goes on. But that guy wound up designing all of the jumpsuits that he wears in Vegas.
Later on.
Which I thought was pretty cool. He just became like the costume. He's Elvis's like personal costume designer his career and also made a lot of clothes for him, like in his personal
life. I've seen some of those costumes. I've seen the leather costume up and close. And it's really thick, how thick the leather was. Like you could see how sweaty Elvis is getting.
Yeah.
Like those lights are hot. And he's got a full-blown motorcycle jacket on.
Yeah.
You know, and with leather pants on.
Yeah, sure. And he's rocking the hell out. So So all right. So the team gets together, you know, the producer, the costume guy's on, and they decide that you know, they want to bring in a couple of Elvis's old like musicians to like rehearse with him.
Yeah.
And at some point, like Doug, you were saying, like Elvis goes he went to Hawaii for like 2 weeks.
He's on a vacation or something like that to lose some weight and to get ready for the show, the live performance.
Yeah. You
know, in front of people for the first time in God knows how long.
Wish I could go away for 2 weeks, come back looking like that at your Elvis. I literally go away for 2 weeks to come back looking like the Vegas version of Elvis.
But Elvis was like doing karate at the time
in shape. He was doing all those drugs that kept him going.
Speed
and all the
Colonel kept on feeding into him, like he Go.
But he so they bring DJ Fontana, his drummer, and Scotty Moore, his guitar player, in to join him. And at some point, Elvis just starts like he literally moved into the dressing room. He was living there as they're doing all the rehearsals. And I guess kind of one of his ways to unwind was he just started like jamming with these guys.
Scotty Moore's a monster.
Yeah,
that was his man. Like all through those early years, that probably made him feel a lot better to have him there with him.
But those guys didn't originally want to do it. They were like, no, we don't want to deal with the Colonel or the Senate. They said, what if we can promise you that you don't even have to see him? And they talked about and they agreed to do it just because how they felt for Elvis.
For Elvis, and they didn't want to
deal with like the Colonel at all. So they did it basically for the love of Elvis. You know, he's such a
good old boy. Yeah. You got to think, like, the Colonel probably screwed them over one point or another to not play with Elvis again at one point during their career.
Yeah, he broke up the band.
He's like, you know, gave him a bigger band to play with.
Yeah, they said that Binder heard those guys jamming, and I wrote that quote down too. He said, these guys jamming is better than all the money we're going to spend on sets and costumes. Sure. We have to get it on tape.
And I watched it, and he's absolutely right.
Yeah.
It's way better than the whole the rest of the show.
It's magic, man.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like the first unplugged.
Yeah,
it's like
there you go.
Elvis unplugged. It's unbelievable.
So they work that into the show that part of it is Elvis in this, like, Ryan, you call it a boxing ring, and you're right. It looks like a little boxing ring without the ropes.
Yeah.
Like in the middle of just people sitting around him, and it's just him and these like three or four dudes just jamming with acoustic guitars. And it's, I was saying to you guys in the notes we're sharing during the week, I was like, I think it's my favorite stuff I've ever heard him do.
Can we get a sound of something like that?
Yeah, dude.
Play the Lordy, Lordy.
Yeah, Miss Claudie.
Yeah. He was rocking out, man. And like, you know, the best thing about these things were in between songs, Elvis was showing his personality. He was kidding around.
Oh, yeah, dude. He tells a story to one time. Like, well, first he pauses and he does like the, he's like, hey, everybody, wait a minute. And he does that little like with his one side of his lip would come up.
Yeah, I read that he wanted to show that off, that he could still do it.
And he's like, hey, I made like 20 movies like this.
Yeah, maybe we'll hear some of that stuff later on.
Yeah,
we'll play a bunch of songs from 68.
Yeah. So the show decided they're going to work this angle into it, man, of the acoustic stuff. And Steve Binder just goes like, dude, don't worry about the cameras. Don't worry about the audio. Just do your thing, man.
But they did what they do, like five songs together with the original band?
No, they did like 10
Yeah, I think it was more than that.
They only showed three.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was like 10.
Steve Binder said like when Elvis took the stage, he was like, as they're getting ready to start, he's like, man, I don't know if this dude is like legit or if he's just a product of the Colonel's PR machine. And he's like, but by the time it was done, I was like, that guy is
on the level.
He's the king of the rock and roll.
I did read something now to Ryan. So like they did like 10 songs, like, you know, and they cut a lot of it out. Like a lot of it was like, from what I read, was improv. There's like they're like, all right, what are we going to play? Okay, we're going to play Hound Dog. We're going to play this. We're going to play that. We're going to do this. We're going to do that.
Elvis forgets the words.
Yeah, you see that.
In all the songs, he's trying to mumble and joke. Joke around it.
Yeah.
But I think that's what shows Elvis, like what kind of humble guy he was.
But there was a lot of improv, like, which is still.
It's all improv.
Yeah.
That's the magic about it. And it's all improv.
And he's still a hardcore entertainer, musician, you know?
Yeah. I thought it was funny that they said, like, when they did that show, they gave Tom Parker, they need to give him a job to keep him away from everybody.
Yeah.
So, like, here, man, you give out all the tickets. And he gave some of the tickets to, like, a security guard. And there was nobody there.
He gave majority of them the security guards. And the guys, the producers, saw that. So they ran to like Bob's big boy.
Yeah,
and they were begging people to come to the show.
And they were like, who cares about Elvis?
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. Here are these young girls sitting on the side of the boxing ring. And they're like, who cares? And once he came out, he was the king of rock and roll. Who were the Beatles? Nobody knew at that moment. It was all Elvis time.
But after hearing that story about them running to Bob Big Boy, dude, I'm watching like yesterday, today. And you see like these old people sitting there, like watching the show, all dressed up in suits and everything like that. And they're just like, this is too fucking loud.
Like, where's Benny Goodman?
Yeah.
it was Elvis.
Even then, Elvis was like a has-been. And the old folks were still
crazy.
They're still pissed off about it.
Yeah. He's 33 when he does this, right? And he's been like,
I wouldn't say he's a has-been because he's making all those movies. And
he's just not a serious musician.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was funny.
His street rep is gone.
Yeah. Exactly. Good point. But like it was funny, like when they were starting to plan this whole thing with Elvis and everything like that, one of the guys, producer, they're like, all right, well, you go keep the Colonel fucking busy. Why we really work on this. So they would pal around with him, go take him drinking. Like there's like reportedly pictures of taken with Colonel, like dressed up as Colonel Sanders and like the other guys dressed up like Napoleon. It got really weird. Yeah,
real weird.
It was like it was like, you know what I mean? Like it was really
weird. They shouldn't write a book about him and his crazy behind the scene life.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what this Tom Hanks is going to be. Maybe the Colonel has some stuff
in his closet.
Yeah. Maybe they'll
like,
let
kinda
it
like,
out.
Kind of like the JFK scene when they're all like dressed up in like.
Yeah. That's what I see happening. I see the Colonel like being dressed
wearing
up
women's underwear.
Yes. Exactly. I hope that's what it is. Because he's a shitbag.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can play this like
which is fine.
Play it again. Bag of the week. Dun, dun, dun. We can play that like 10 times.
But we got to put it out there, which there's nothing wrong today with wearing women's underwear out there.
There's nothing wrong.
Be who you
want to
be. Be who you want to be.
Yeah. But the Colonel, for with the time, and he was a shitbag. Yeah. Just like what he just before even he met Elvis, he was a shitbag. You know?
Yeah, exploited. Yeah, exploited the shit out of him. Yeah,
Elvis wasn't his first
victim,
guy in
his
music.
Victim?
Yeah, he wasn't his first guy in music. He had a little bit of experience of dealing with musicians. He had a country act. I forget the name of the dude's, the country guy's name, but he exploited the shit out of him. And then the Colonel used the money that he made him to sign Elvis over.
So,
but like everything with this show, man, it seemed like he tried to sabotage everything about this show, that he didn't want Elvis to like move on from, you know, the Colonel's like, you know, strings.
Like you could pick out the parts where the Colonel had his hands in.
There you can see it.
There's some pretty bad numbers, as I say.
Yeah.
You know, Elvis is, you know, there's a few good ones, but then there's a few ones that he's like floating around, looks like something that would be on like Glenn Matt, what was like
yeah, like the Andy Williams show.
Yeah. There's like a cat house scene, like he's in a cat house, and then that was kind of like real weird. It was a little risque. Like even then, I was like, "Ooh, this is really strange." And then there's like a belly dancer, and like
there was like a gangster thing going on. Yeah, he was like going from scene to scene as a guitar player.
Yeah, that's true.
Real weird.
Yeah,
it was real weird.
So the show is generally broken up into so you could go through it chronologically the way in which it aired, but the general idea of it was there was this unplugged part. And then there was it's generally called the sit down. And then there's other parts called the stand up. And the stand up is more like the produced, and there's like some strings behind it and some weird fucking dance.
I think it's rocking.
It's Vegas Elvis. Well, it's pre-Vegas
Elvis.
Vegas
Elvis shit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a precursor for the Vegas Elvis stuff. We can go whatever order you want. I wrote all my notes down chronologically because I just watched it. But it opened with Trouble and Guitar Man, which is what we played when we came out of the monologue, and it's just great, man. Even in the video, it's just a close up of him just staring, you know, in that all that leather outfit, just a classic. A little bit of his hair is hanging down, and the camera pulls out to him. It's just a waist up, then it kind of pulls out even more, and it's all these silhouettes of Guitar Man, like just kind of dancing behind. It's just really cool, really rocking.
Yeah, there's some great moments of rock and roll there.
Yeah.
You want to hear another song?
Yeah, dude.
Play Heartbreak Hotel from The Sit Down.
The Sit Down? All right.
That's magic, man.
I could listen to that whole fucking thing, man. Yeah.
That's his voice is at its best. The rock and roll screecher is there, man.
The dudes in the band is like, oh, come on, get out of here. Like, this is great.
They're trying to calm him down
That makes me – I wonder if that's, like, recorded earlier, like, in that sit-down. Is that, like, one of the first couple songs that he sang with them? Because he does sound a little nervous
this
in there.
This is the first
And
sit-down.
They're cheering him on, like, go get it, son.
That's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to get him to go. Yeah. And it's Elvis is like really hard to control on stage because they have him sitting down. And in whole Elvis career, he never sat down in his whole life. So he's getting up and he starts dancing.
Yeah.
He's doing the king swing kind of thing.
Like in the chair.
The king swing kind of thing.
Yeah, he starts wiggling and shit.
Yeah, he's putting his hips out. And there's the one part he starts yelling for a guitar strap when he's doing the sit down.
There's some great in-between songs things that are on this box set that we're listening to.
Yeah, it was like – and he starts singing One Night With You, and he's like, One Night With A Guitar Strap.
Yeah,
and he's like
–
and then they can't find one, so he just kind of stands up, and he puts his foot up like on a chair.
Yeah.
And
I've some seen dude, that chair.
Yeah, and the guy – oh, really?
Yeah, he's in the rock and roll thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And the guy just like – somebody's just holding the mic stand like up.
Yeah.
And it's just – it's so cool.
And he's just having such a good time. Like you can see that he's like, this is a feeling I haven't felt in a long time, man. Like, you know, starting to like – relive it.
He's starting to believe again.
Yeah.
He's starting to believe again.
Yeah.
I hope they have that in the movie, man. Like, you see him, like, start having all these flashbacks and shit.
I think 68 is going to be a big part of the movie.
Yeah.
It's got to be.
He's going to have, like, all these flashbacks. Like, this is what I do. Not these bullshit movies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And all that.
You know, like you said, he did this, and then he went right to Vegas.
Yeah.
And then from Vegas, he got bored. He did Vegas for a long time.
Yeah, then he went on tour, right?
And then he just toured his ass off until he died.
Yeah. But never left the country because of the colonel.
Because of the colonel.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Colonel Tom Parker couldn't get a passport.
Yeah.
I would have just left him in this fucking...
He played like Winnipeg and like he played like in Canada like twice.
He played Hawaii.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Hawaii's parts.
Yeah. I want to play a little bit of Baby What You Want Me to Do from the sit down because I think this is my favorite version of a favorite Elvis song. Here you go. Dude, I love that.
That's fantastic.
It just sounds so raw. It's just jamming. Yeah, man. We were just talking while we were playing this. This is one of the few times, too, like Elvis is playing the guitar.
Yeah, he's not just holding it.
Right.
Yeah. During the whole sit down, he plays guitar through the whole sit down.
Yeah.
I mean, not that he's not playing it in the stand up thing, but he's really jamming with his boys.
Yeah.
Like they might as well be on the storefront. Yeah. Somewhere because that's where they're earning their head.
Yeah.
You know?
But Ryan said something good. Like, Elvis is probably the least talented musician on that whole stage compared to the rest of those guys.
I mean, he's the king. He's got the voice and he's
that's the
man.
Whole thing. Yeah.
But those guys were very talented musicians.
Yeah. And he's never been known as like a guitar player.
No,
right.
He's held it.
Like, it was saying, he's just holding it.
Yeah.
Right.
He posed.
But he is playing though. We're watching this thing.
No,
like,
he can play.
He played enough to hold his own.
He used the guitar as a prop.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the majority of his career is like, he's not holding a guitar. He's not playing a guitar. He's not known to being a guitar player.
No.
Early
in his career. Yeah.
He's a musician who kind of knows how to like, it'd be like, I'm not putting myself in the same, like me holding a fucking guitar. You know, I said I'm like a monkey holding.
Yeah. But just, he knows enough to get him by,
He knew enough to get people's attention at the hayride and. You know,
but with this thing though, I think he really did cram. Though I think he really he's playing with these guys, and he, like they rehearse enough, and he's like, "Well, I want to play." This is just me thinking.
Well,
he got it down.
Like, I don't know how much rehearsal they got into it,
right?
Because it's too loose.
Yeah, it's too loose.
Too loose.
But I think
maybe if they sat around in the dressing room and fucked
that's
around
what I mean.
Beforehand.
Like, yeah,
I think that's what they were doing. Yeah.
And they're like, "Oh, we got to capture this."
Yeah,
them just fucking around in the room.
Because it's really, you're right, because they were like, oh, well, we got to play Hound Dog or something.
Yeah.
Like, somebody says that, like, well, we got to play this before, you know, and they just kind of, like, spill into it.
Do you, like, go into Elvis's greatest hits?
These guys are known for playing his early stuff, you know, so you have to play the early stuff.
Yeah. Let's keep on playing songs, Bruce.
Yeah, dude.
Let's play Love Me.
Off the sit down.
Yeah,
here we go.
Man, that kills it, dude.
That's my favorite Elvis song of all time.
Yeah, it's a great one. That's a great one.
It's great. I don't think any people really know about that song.
That's crazy.
Like, it's not like one of his big hits. Like, Love Me Tender is.
Yeah, that's a way better song than Love Me Tender.
Oh, yeah.
But it was like, you can hear him sing, dude, and he's still got it, man.
Yeah.
He's still belting it out. Like, you got to be standing there in awe watching this guy just belt this out. Like,
but the magic's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, he always had that kind of like, there was a weird, like, he could do like Hound Dog. He just like gets after it.
Yeah.
That other song we were just playing, Baby You Want Me to Do, he just gets after it. And he has like this crooner voice that he does, like Love Me Tender and like that song where it's just really smooth.
Well,
he
admired so many different kind of music besides rock and roll. He's real into Mario Lanza and real into like Dean Martin and the smooth voices of these dudes. You know, he really admired that. I think he, over time.
And gospel. He's really like, yeah.
But he became this ballad singer. Like, he was this huge screecher for most of part of his career. But then he belts out these ballads that are like, holy shit, who could do better than him on these songs?
He has those songs that are just a wild man with a guitar shaking his hips, scaring the hell out of everybody. Then he's got that, like, it's like harnessed and focused more. Like
oh, his range is unbelievable, dude.
And it just shows like it's just natural talent. The, you know, maybe Elvis isn't the most musically talented guy on that stage, but there's only one Elvis, and
you're right.
Elvis is carrying that whole jam session because it's all about him.
Yeah, he's like the orchestra or the conductor, basically. Like those guys are like are playing toward him, like yeah, you know,
going his speed.
Yeah, going what direction yeah. he wants to go into. You know,
he wants to stand up. All right, we're gonna stop. They, yeah, they do. They really go. They make him comfortable every piece of that time they're on the stage, and they're kidding around. They're boys.
Yeah,
you know, there's one part of it they didn't show in the special, and one of the guys was like, hang on, Elvis, hang on for a second. And there's a piece of fuzz on his face.
Oh, yeah, I see
and
that.
And he picks the fuzz off his face and gives it to the girl in the,
front.
Girl
in the yeah, audience.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And she puts it in her purse. Yeah, yeah. She opens her purse and puts it in there. It's awesome. I'm looking at the playlist now. What else can we play?
Anything from Sit Down, dude.
All right. You know what was actually a pretty interesting song was Tiger Man. Is from
yes.
Sit Down. Yeah.
Yes. And, you were talking about this week.
Play a little bit of that because as I was – I'm like, I don't really know this song. So I just looked up and it was on the liner, like written by Joe Hill Lewis. I'm like, oh, and Sam Phillips. I was like, oh, Joe Hill Lewis is, he was a one man band
sure.
that we talked yeah. about on our Sun Records thing that I don't think any yeah. of us had ever heard of.
He until was the first recording artist that Sun ever had.
Yeah. And the song's cool because at one point Elvis pulls out a handkerchief and he wipes his face and he throws it to a girl in the crowd who goes, bonkers. But yeah, it was a really cool song. And I was like, oh, wait, I know this guy from doing the show. We'll play a little bit of it.
Yeah, he rocks it out, man.
Well, I'm the king of the jungle. They call me the Tiger Man. I'm the king of the jungle. They call me the Tiger Man. If you cross my path, you take your whole life in your hand.
But I never heard that before. I don't think I ever listened to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the songs that they didn't put it on the special. Yeah,
and it's fan, dude, it's just the beginning of it, you know? It,
really?
I think it was a little
crazy.
Bit, it was a little bit too raw for a Christmas
ABC,
special.
For ABC?
For, yeah, a Christmas special.
But he only sang one Christmas. He was saying Blue Christmas. That's the only thing
no,
that made it.
He sang a couple songs.
Did he? I thought he just did Blue Christmas.
I think Blue Christmas is the one that like made the cut, right? It was on the special?
Yeah.
Was it?
I didn't put it on the playlist.
No, I didn't either. Yeah.
But, like, I guess the Colonel got one Christmas song out of the whole friggin' thing.
Ryan, you made a point when we were sharing our notes, and you said it real in passing, too. Like, this set the stage for MTV Unplugged.
It sure, is.
It is. It's, like, it the is. First MTV Unplugged performance.
And we have to give it up to the producer. Of
this is Vision, yeah.
You know, it's, like, it's a new idea. Maybe it's something that all the country guys did, like, back in the day, all the yeehaws, they sat around and campfire and did all that shit. But it was never done in a rock and roll set on TV that I ever seen.
Seeing it
like you said, like, on TV, dude. Like, I mean, on TV. And
it's
on
so
prime
raw.
Time TV.
It's you know? So raw for Elvis. There's yeah. him used to being lip-syncing the movie yeah. soundtracks.
Yeah. You and know? Even in the beginning of this thing, of this show, he's lip-syncing the whole time. Like, like we say, like, he's going through, like the guitar player song.
Yeah,
the whole
man.
It's really bad. It's really cheesy.
Well, it's 60. What was on TV in 68?
I was trying to, yeah.
The top
yeah. professor, look that up.
Top TV shows is 1968.
Because I try to keep that in perspective when I was thinking that. I'm like, all right, what was Kevin Arnold watching this? Like, you know what I mean? What was Kevin Arnold watching at this time?
Yeah, he was only watching the Beatles. Elvis has come and gone yeah. at this time.
Bonanza, Gomer Pyle. The original Batman. So you got kind of like some campy. Yeah. I was thinking it too when I was hearing yeah. The stand-up part. I was trying to put it in the context of yeah, the yeah. era that we're listening to.
But like before they got to this in the show, like you said, like Batman was on. That was a big deal, like Batman was on.
Yeah.
And you see like the sequences they're doing with the girls and everything like that. It was very, very
there
like.
There was some strange shit going
but
on in
so
that.
Was Batman, man.
No, like, it was, Elvis was totally visioned a little bit. It's like they did a karate dance sequence yeah. in this 68 comeback special.
Yeah, we'll like, get to that.
It was
when we talk
bad.
About the stand up.
It's bizarre.
Watch out, man.
Yeah, it's really bizarre.
Karate.
We should probably play the little part where he talks about like what's the show? He talks about like he can only move his pinky finger.
Yeah, Florida.
Yeah,
he's playing in Florida.
Yeah,
I believe it's the end of
He's like Hound Dog. He does like a little bit of like, he's like, imagine I could only move my pinky. You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
That's it. Yeah, you're right.
It was really funny. We got to find
because he would have been arrested in Florida if he would have shook anything. So he just sat there and moved his pinky, he said.
It's just a good, it's a good part of his, we should just play it just to illustrate.
I don't think he was performing Hound Dog at the time.
Yeah,
he just worked it in. It in there.
Yeah.
I don't know what song it is.
All right, I can find
it. I listened to it a million times this week.
I did too.
Hey, Elvis, the fingers.
Yeah, that's all I could move in Florida. Yeah, the police filmed a show one time in Florida because the PGA, the YMCA, or somebody, they thought I was something. And they said, man, he's got to be crazy. So the police came out and they filmed the show. So I couldn't move. I had to stand still. The only thing I moved was my little finger like that. The whole show.
Man, so it's just really good that he's just kind of
chumming around.
He's telling jokes. He's being funny. We said a couple times, like, he takes a handkerchief from some girl and he wipes his face and he throws it back at
him. He does it constantly from a different girl. Like, he just gets tissue, wipes his head down, and now it's on eBay somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like his stage presence definitely came back. Like, you know, and that's something like with him wiping like the handkerchiefs later in Vegas, like, you know, just,
he's a showman.
Yeah.
And there's no dudes in the audience, right? It's all women.
No, I think there's a dude sitting on the side of the stage, but he's playing tambourine.
Yeah. Who is that guy?
I don't know. I think he's the producer. I think he's the producer.
He's got to be juiced in somehow. Maybe he's part of the Memphis Mafia.
I don't know, but he's just like, he's a main part of that part, and he's sitting on the stage. Like, the tambourine is very well known in that sound.
You can hear it, right? Yeah. There's three percussionists in the band, so I think it's probably one of those guys.
Yeah.
So
and he's on beat too, so, you know, thank God.
Yeah, there's six people on the Unplugged, and three of them are listed as percussionists. So one of them's got to be the tambourine.
But he's just in a regular suit. He wasn't in that red suit with the rest of the guys.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think
Maybe he's like a music for the project, for the 68 special.
Just like, kind of snuck like on the stage or something.
I would too, man.
Yeah, dude.
Hey, who can play tambourine?
Right.
I can.
Play the triangle, the tambourine. All those one-handed instruments that you can play when you're in a school band and you can't play anything else. Yeah. Like, I play the triangle. Ding! Yeah, that
is
was
that
my
played in high school?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Ding dong.
Yeah, pretty much. So is there anything else on the sit down that we should talk about? As I said, we talked about the kind of the funny,
besides playing music on it.
We talked about the song Memories. It's just kind of like the bridge.
He sits down.
Yeah, he's sitting on the edge of the stage with like a girl on either side.
Yeah.
It's not a real good song. It's just not. Yeah, you know.
Can you play it?
Memories press between the pages of my mind. Memories sweeten through the ages just like wine.
I think we found our electric chair song.
Right. Seeing like the Spanish guitar and the way
it's a little bit overdone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the stand up stuff on this special is overdone. In my
I think
opinion,
it's kind
of
rocking. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a sucker.
Yeah.
Did the Colonel pick that one?
I'm sure he did. Yeah. Because he is the shitbag of the week.
Of the week.
No, that's never going to get old.
Dun. No.
Not this episode.
Is that it on the stand up show?
I said I have other songs, but we don't have to play them.
Okay, no. What else do you want to hear, man? It's such a kick ass part of music. What else do you want to hear from it?
The Blue Suede Shoes.
Got it. Man, I love
See?
That.
He's like great. Forgetting the words of the song shit. Yeah, man. He was just having fun. He was having fun with his boys.
So the guy playing tambourine is a guy named Lance LeGault. And it actually says he starred in the A-Team. So now I'm like, what is he?
He did what on the A-Team?
He said he was in the A-Team.
But the guy playing the tambourine?
Yeah.
He was on the A-Team? Is it Face?
No, was it? That would be fucking awesome. Mr. T played the tambourine?
I pity the fool.
He was fucking Colonel Decker from the A-Team.
Get the way.
Fuck out of here.
Was he the bad guy?
Yeah. He's the guy who's always chasing him.
Fucking Colonel Decker played the tambourine. You gotta be kidding me. Scumbag 68.
This has got to stay on there, dude, man.
And he's on time. He's keeping beat. He's really, he's like the
real Colonel, man.
Holy shit, man.
You always hear that on our show, pal.
Oh, my God. Dude, that's amazing.
Bruce's face is totally red right now laughing.
This is legitimately like
he's like belly laughing out loud.
We're having a rough go of it, man, because like Spotify's not working and I'm getting frustrated. And they said, oh my God. And I look at I'm like, as that last song was playing, I'm like, yeah, who is playing the tambourine? I Google it and it said Lance Legault. He's like, oh, okay. He's in my notes as being in the band. Also says the A-Team. So I pull up Wikipedia, I type in A-Team. So he's best known in his television role in the 1980 series, the A-Team, is Colonel Decker, the United States colonel who tried to catch the Vietnam veterans.
That's amazing.
That's fucking crazy. That's how many separations?
Yeah.
What is it? 8 degrees of separation?
Yeah.
Oh my God, dude. That's
Mr. T. How many separations does it take Mr. T to get that?
Oh my God. Elvis, yeah.
So one separation.
We can't edit any of that out.
No.
We've got to keep it in. And that's like a holy shit. I learned something today. The Colonel Decker from the A Team
played tambourine.
Oh, dude. That's fucking fantastic.
Do you think he'd like brag that about that?
I would, yeah.
Like during lunch
at the A-Team, hey, Mr. T.
Right. Take that like Elvis part.
It's like, you know, had some really good gold chains was Elvis.
Right. Yeah. You love it when a plan comes together. I love it when a plan comes together. Dude, that's
amazing.
Awesome. That's really funny. That's probably a good part to take a break.
Yes.
And regroup. And we're going to come back. We'll talk about the stand up part of the show, which is a little bit more produced. And then
we say stand up. Now he's no comedian.
Right. All the kind of good stuff, you know, the more polished the studio version. It's like a different part of the show. We'll talk about that. We've got some music news and electric chair and all that good stuff, so we'll be back.
Stick around.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia. There's something for everyone on the beer list and the jukebox at McCusker's. It's minutes from the sports stadiums in Philly, making it a great place to stop by for a few drinks before or after a concert or a game. Come see for yourself why everyone from Philadelphia Magazine to Playboy has called it one of the best dive bars in the city. Visit them at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia or on Facebook. That's McCusker's Tavern. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life can feel overwhelming these days. We're all moving at a million miles an hour and sometimes get so wrapped up in everything and everyone around us that we don't take the time to invest in ourselves. Without a healthy mind, being truly happy and at peace is hard. But the good news is, therapy works. But what is therapy exactly? It's whatever you want it to be. Maybe you're not feeling motivated right now and would like some tools to help. Or maybe you're feeling insecure in relationships or at work, not dealing well with stress. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better, because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself, because you are the greatest asset. And as a special offer to Prisoners of Rock and Roll listeners, you can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at BetterHelp.com/prisoner. That's BetterHelp.com/prisoner. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode.
All right, we're back. Thanks so much for sticking with us. So we're going to move on to the second part of the Elvis 68 special. So the first part was him. It was called The Sit Down. It was kind of like the MTV Unplugged part. And the second part is largely just called The Stand Up, because he's standing, is on a stage. The backing band isn't there anymore. And it's really more kind of like the Doug, I think you said, like the Vegas era kind of.
It's just him like on a little stage, like a little ego
ramp.
It's
the same stage. They just hook up all the other
the other
musicians. And it's just Elvis by himself with that red guitar that's so famous.
And I think they recorded it like at a different time. I think
it was the following day.
It's a different crowd. It's a different audience and all that kind of stuff.
It has a totally different feel.
It does. It is not my favorite. I'm not a big fan of this era of Elvis. I'm not a big fan of this genre. Of,
yeah,
like that kind of. Over, I think it's just a little overproduced for me, but I totally understand that's what's going on in the at that part of the
even
year.
Even that time of that time of music. I mean, 68, a lot of like melodies going on, like each song doing something different.
Yeah, a lot of strings or some flute. Several members of the Wrecking Crew are playing on this.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No and, kidding.
Wow. Darlene Love is singing backup in parts of
it. Oh, really?
With the group The Blossoms.
Oh, I did read that. Yeah.
Girls.
Yeah.
Darlene Love is one of those backup
singers. You know
what?
I did read that, like, he, there was, like, some, like, gospel parts, and he wasn't going to do any gospel parts, or the colonel didn't want him to do it, and he wasn't going to get the girls to sing on it, and then Elvis is like, no, I kind of want the girls to sing on it. Something like that.
Yeah, it was like, the notes that I put on it was like, so he does the gospel stuff, and that's the song that Darlene Love is on, and it starts really weird, man. There's a couple, like the video of this, there's a weird like dude dancing, this weird ballet kind of thing,
yeah,
and it's
yeah.
in the gospel part, which is really, really odd.
There was like so much weird shit going on in this special besides these awesome rock and roll moments. There was some really bad shit going on in these, like bad TV moments.
The 60s, man.
Yeah.
And like, you have to think, like, Laughing was probably big. Like,
yeah.
That whole look, like, this 68.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. And he, I think he didn't want to, he wanted to do the gospel song. And then there was some comments that he thought that the choir was all, he's like, it was all white women. And he wanted some diversity in it because it was, like, right after Martin Luther King. And he wanted to make a statement in the last song. So he had the Blossoms come out that Darlene Love is a part of and singing it. Yeah, the dancing is really weird. But there's some really cool parts in the gospel melody where, like, the rock and roll and the gospel part, like, crosses together. And I've always liked that
in
music.
We can't – there's a part that he starts talking about how – rock and roll is basically country and gospel music.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He talks about it in the special.
Our music is basically, rock and roll music is basically gospel or rhythm and blues. And it sprang from that. And it's people have been adding to it, adding instruments to it, experimenting with it.
But you, like, you know, I don't know if it was, I guess it was after this, because he put out a gospel album and he won a Grammy for it. You know
he
what
put
mean?
Out a bunch of shit for did everything.
He, yeah.
But like for one, he won a Grammy for gospel album.
I think he put a Passover album out.
He might.
He had a handful of gospel albums. I think I can get to the part where like there's a, in the song Saved, so the gospel number is a melody of like one, two, three, four, five different songs all put together. But at one point, man, it gets really rocking. Anyway, but yeah, dude, so the melody with the weird dancing in it is one of like three or four songs that are just really bizarre with like dancing in it. There's one really
long. It's like a production
long...
kind of thing. Let's just.
Yeah.
It's like a variety musical, TV
yeah,
show
a musical number.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like what TV was doing at the time.
Yeah.
A lot of variety show kind of looking.
Thing. Yeah, there's literally one song on here that I just wrote in my notes. It said, what the hell? Because it's like it's a melody of like Nothingville, Guitar Man, Let Yourself Go, Guitar Man, It Hurts Me, Take Good Care of Her, Trouble, Back to Guitar Man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a little like a short version, like he's got like his jackets like over his shoulders and he's walking around with a guitar and then he beats up a guy.
Yeah, he's walking from scene to scene, like really
he's got his guitar.
The guy
smashes his guitar, like the gangster looking
guy. Big like heavy dude with a beard.
He has a song called Big Man or something like that.
Yeah.
And then like
he's got like a weird denim outfit on. He's got a denim shirt and a denim jeans.
And then he's singing while like he's doing all this karate with all these people and it's so like it's probably
karate.
What like action scenes in his movies would look like. It's just so bad.
He was like showing off his karate.
Yeah.
But it was really funny. You know, we were talking earlier when Elvis was doing the pre-production of all this. So he was rehearsing with the band and everything like that. So his guys were all around, like the Memphis Mafia. So he'd walk into a room and he was like just starting to, like not starting to study karate, but like guys from his entourage would like fake attack him. So he'd like
practices karate on these guys.
He was probably so drugged out all the time. he was probably pretending land. He's like, hey, give me whatever you want, man. Hey, man, pretend that you're
exactly,
and you coming at me. You're coming at me with a knife.
Like you do.
Oh, won't you remember?
And it's so weird. Like he's fighting all these people, and he's doing like somersaults, and he's still like singing at the time. He's like lip syncing this stuff, and then at one point, when he's singing "Trouble," he shows up in the gold jacket, which is on the 50 million Elvis fans can't be wrong. And as that came up, I was like, oh, I've seen that before. Man, there is a whole fucking website that just documents every time he's ever worn that outfit. That's the really? Whole website.
Really? I thought he only took it for like one picture.
I think he was like, he did a couple shows and then he would wear the jacket without the pants because he hated the pants. And because it was like that, whatever the hell that was, like the material was real like crinkly shit from like the 70s. And of course Colonel Tom Parker, being the eternal showman, used to always say that suit was made of unborn calf skin and 24 karat gold, and I guess the producers wanted him to come back out wearing that, like the full thing. Yeah. Like, hey, the throwback. And he was like, no,
I'm not wearing that jacket again.
That's just not it. You know, that's everybody knows that album cover, right? He's on it like 18 times wearing the jacket, like all over the place, wearing the whole outfit.
Yeah, had, so
like,
many gold fans shoes. Can't be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, he had so many like gold shoes and gold pants and gold jacket, and it's, you know, he's a country boy.
I've seen that outfit too.
Up until up until we saw the Graceland, I always thought that was like a painting of some sort. I didn't know that was an actual photograph.
And it looks different, man. You see the pictures of it, or you see it real. It's like way more
flamboyant.
Yeah, it's like a richer color, like shinier than that painting or whatever the.
Yeah,
it looks like a watercolor or something on that album cover. Yeah, I just thought it was interesting. Like, I was like, man, I am so far down the goddamn rabbit hole. And I'm reading this website of like every time and day that he ever wore that.
But imagine somebody like being so intrigued. Buy this suit, they would just make a website, or it could be a joke.
And that's Elvis fans, man. I think Elvis fans are like, they comb over every single thing in his life.
Crazy not to.
I do. I'm a huge Elvis fan.
That's right. Oh, you made that website.
Yes, I did. Absolutely. I know everything that he wore, when he wore it, his shoe size.
Oh,
everything.
My God. And then that song kind of comes back to – it circles back to him. He's on the little boxing ring stage in the leather outfit. But it's – you got to watch it on – you got to watch the video because it's really bizarre. Just because, the unplugged stuff is really kick ass and it's stripped down and it's just really cool. And he's in this rockin' leather outfit and he's, you know, the pompadour and the, you know, kind of a greaser look. And then you're like, what the hell is this? Yeah.
You know, it's really great. I didn't talk about that earlier, like in the first half, like with the sit down thing. You see him passing guitars back and forth between him and the other guy. Like you're playing acoustic guitar, then he has the electric guitar, and he's passing it back and forth. It probably didn't, it probably didn't make the show, but that's how loose those guys were. You know,
yeah. There's so many parts in that, man, where like they're just cheering him on, like go get it,
his cheering section.
Yeah,
they were the original cheering section for him. You know, who else had Elvis's back then in the beginning? You know, and now he's making this comeback. Who does he trust? The guys that he came up with,
right? Yeah, it was almost like a blues jam kind of really cool.
When you do stuff like that, that's when the magic happens. Like unrehearsed. Kind of thing, and you're sitting around and you'll never make it sound that ever again. Like
a bunch of dudes and Colonel Decker just sitting around just playing music, man. Really enjoyed it. What else on the stand? You know, so the stand up, I'm going through my notes, man, because I have it in chronological order, so I don't have all the stand up stuff together. A lot of the stuff, man, so like he does a little melody of his he does Heartbreak Hotel, Hound Dog, and All Shook Up. And I wrote on my notes at one point, I said I wasn't crazy about the first time I heard it. I just had it like playing in the background, like the audio. And then I watched it, and it was a completely different experience for me. And it's at one point he gets up and he goes like, "It's been a long time, baby." And the crowd is going nuts. And at some point, like you can see it's like kind of uncomfortable, like a pause because the crowd's going so loud. He just shuts up and just kind of looks around, and it lets it go way longer than it. You know, it's instead of like a 10 seconds.
Well, he hasn't been on stage for so many years.
Yeah,
like I mean, like he's embracing it. Like he's enjoying the moment.
Yeah,
you know.
At one point, like he's holding the mic, and someone he puts his hand down. And he just kind of like he nods and he smiles, and the crowd just keeps on going.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Like he's kind of like, all right, he's back.
Yeah. I'm Elvis and I'm back.
Yeah, and he's at one point in the video, he's like, he falls to his knees and he's kind of like swinging his, like he just totally gets into it. Sure. And it's just like,
he was Elvis. A showman. Everything he did, it's like, once again, he was on stage like he was in the beginning. And he, you know, this time on TV, they're letting him swing his hips and jump around and, yeah, you know, do everything that he wasn't allowed to do 10 yeah. years before
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I think I can get a little bit of that, the melody.
I think he was grooving a lot.
Dude, he sounded great,
yeah,
man.
His hair's falling. Yeah. And the point where he just like kind of lets it go, he's like, yeah. He just kind of like free flows.
Yeah, he's
it.
Getting into it, man. He yeah. sounds great, dude.
Yeah.
I think the band sounds great. I think
yeah, the strings
backup,
and all that. Yeah.
The backup sounds great.
I could do without the strings and everything. It
makes it sound full.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I could do a little bit more raw, but then maybe his voice doesn't sound the same. But that's okay. That's just my, you know, my thoughts on it.
His
but,
voice was definitely like was screeching. Was not great. Screeching, but yeah. like
it's powerful. That, it was powerful.
That rawness of an uncleared throat.
You said that when we were talking in the Motown episode about Joan Osborne. You're like, when the voice cracks a little bit, that's where all the magic happens. Yeah. You could tell, dude, he's just throwing himself into it. Yeah. At some point, he kind of like looks around. He's got that little sneer. Like, he's just living the moment.
He's a bad motherfucker.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah. Right. He's being a motherfucker right there. Yep. Really cool.
He is the motherfucker.
Yeah. Yes. The king of the motherfuckers. Really, really cool, man.
And I think it reminded everybody that he was the king. I think, like you said, like Jerry Lee and all these dudes, they already came and went. And, you know, like especially Jerry Lee was like, I'm the king of rock and roll.
Yeah. Right.
Fuck this motherfucker. Yeah. And here he is 10 years later proving that he was the king of rock and roll.
There's only one Elvis.
He also has a little bit of fun with it, too. Like, you remember the like he changes the lyrics to Love Me Tender?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, maybe we should play a little bit of that, too.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it reminded me almost of like
Love me tender, love me sweet. You have made my life a wreck, not complete, and I love you so. Love me tender, love me true, all my dreams.
He's always had fun with that song. Like, you watch the Vegas Elvis documentary they made a few years later, I guess it was in the 70s, and he's singing this, and the girls are on stage. He goes, woo! He goes behind them and all, and the girls all start laughing, and, like,
he
you know.
He loved being in front of the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big thing that the Colonel took away from him, was performing in front of the audience. And look at such a intimate setting that Elvis totally outshined everybody in that whole stage.
Now, that being said, you brought up a good point. Like, the Colonel took him away from it. Do you think the Colonel, like, doubted his talent to play live, and that's why he kept on making him doing, like, movie after movie
movie? No, I think
it was just easier.
I think the Colonel had his own vision, and that vision was Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, that's where the real money was at.
Right.
Not these little concerts.
Yeah, these concerts. And he couldn't go anywhere. Like, I mean, the Colonel couldn't leave. But, so the opportunity was only so much. How many times are you going to play Philly?
Yeah, but they could show Elvis in Taiwan. You know, Elvis is in Taiwan in the movie. I mean, not in the movie, but, showing the movie in Taiwan.
Yeah, that's
and the,
yeah.
And
the, good point.
They're listening to Elvis music.
Good point.
You know?
That's a good point.
And he could make those movies, I guess, because the production schedules got tighter and tighter because they were under so much pressure to, like, just keep churning these things out. Yeah. So it'd be like, all right, you make the movie, then you go do the...
Elvis fans would always go out and see the movies.
Right. And then you go make the soundtrack, or Elvis would have some leftover stuff that they would force into the movies to promote the movie, and then you buy the sound. It was just like, I mean, it is... It's good business.
With all these movies being made, I wonder how much money prior to his death that these movies made for the movie companies, the Paramounts and the MGMs and all that.
I think the business was totally different then than it is now.
Was it like profitable?
Like, I'm sure the Colonel made money on it. I'm sure Elvis made money on it.
They made their money before the movie was even out.
That's very true. But was Elvis that still big of a deal for them to keep on pushing out movies like this? Or just became like an actor?
It was such a big deal. They put him on TV during Christmas.
They said on average, a film would cost about $2 million to make, which was about $15 million today, which is really not that big of a deal, right? For a movie. And they said it would make about three times that. So
people were going out and seeing it then.
Right.
Yeah. Like
$45 million.
So people were still
All the parents are going out and seeing the Elvis movies.
Yeah.
Right. So they're making, so the studios are making money. It's just, I think as the quality just gets crappier and crappier. Yeah. Just
the stories are bad.
And you know what's funny? When
the
acting's
bad.
Yeah, it's hokey.
I read when they put this out. Like, so what was the date that the 68 comics? The special came out, like the date was like December, like right around Christmas.
Close to Christmas.
They said 70% of watchers were watching TV that day watched this.
Well, you only had three channels.
Yeah.
That's true.
Three channels to watch. Yeah. It's not like we had like 800 channels now.
Yeah. I saw that too.
But 70%, that's not too bad. Like people still loved Elvis.
Yeah. I mean, again, there was only three channels at that time. There was only two other shows to watch.
Yeah.
I think it outdid Andy Griffin or whoever the fuck was on TV that night.
Yeah, I'm sure you had people that were legitimately just curious, like, okay, Elvis, like, I know who Elvis is, you know, he was, that guy that was in the movies, and there's probably, like, legit fans were like, holy crap, he's
back.
But do
you think, like, bands like the Beatles watched it and everything like that and said, this guy is the king of rock and roll?
If they were playing a gig that night or doing whatever, then I would say definitely.
Like 68, they weren't playing anything. They weren't doing anything but taking drugs.
I think, true. I think people, I think.
They were probably watching it.
They were probably watching it.
Like, you know,
I think all those bands, The Who, The Grateful Dead, any band that was even interested in music was watching the comeback special.
Yeah.
Just wanted to see if he was really going to make a comeback.
It really, like, it's hard to wrap your head around that to, like, that you have all those bands you just mentioned and then, like that Elvis is, he is like this archaic relic from another era that isn't really that long ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's so crazy to think about it.
Think about what was 10 years ago from now. What was that? Like Jennifer Lopez had a huge song.
Right. Like she gave the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I was going to say she just did Super Bowl.
Kind of like, okay. Like, but it's more about her how she looked than what she was singing.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, it's just like, it's such an interesting cultural phenomenon, this whole special.
It opened the doors for a lot of new ideas, especially recording live band kind of stripped down things.
Yes, and that's a good point, too. They never, like these TV specials never really had this like one dude. It was always like a variety show.
Yeah.
So the show was actually sponsored by the Singer Sewing Machine. At the time, so it was called like the Elvis Special, sponsored by Singer Sewing Machine. And Singer had gone to NBC saying, all right, we're going to make three specials. We're going to do Elvis, we're going to do Liberace, and we're going to do Don Ho. So it was like, that was like what they're thinking. Like, so they put Elvis in that same bucket. That's kind of the quality that they thought they were going to get. And Elvis being the king of the motherfuckers just blew the roof off. I have no idea if they ever made the other two.
Not so, near like, I can't, you know, I can't imagine Don Ho being bigger than Elvis.
No,
special.
Right. No. Like, who's
Don Ho rocks.
Yeah,
Don
he
Ho
was
rocks.
A big deal. He was a big deal.
But he ain't no Elvis.
No.
So Singer said that they wanted Elvis. They wanted, if they were going to do three specials, they wanted Elvis.
They had signed on to produce like three specials. Yeah.
Did they get to pick Elvis to do it?
No, I think once it got pitched, Singer had a promotional thing with NBC.
Okay.
But if you see the original, it was like it wasn't called the Elvis Comeback Special.
It was called
the
Singer's.
Yeah, the Singer Elvis special.
Yeah, they didn't come up with the Comeback Special until years.
Yeah.
That title anyway.
Yeah, like culturally later. That got attached. Yeah. Yes. Like the fans put that to it. But it was really interesting. What else from the stand up? Before we get to the last song, is there anything else that was on the stand up you want to talk about?
I mean, we can go through a bunch of songs that everybody knows, but you know, fuck it. Let's just play something that matters.
All right. So the last song that Elvis does on the special is If I Can Dream. And that's it's a special song because Elvis was really, Ryan, you were saying, like, he was really moved by Robert Kennedy's assassination. And he was like, he wanted to do something. I mean, the Colonel wanted to end with I'll Be Home for Christmas. Right.
It's horrible
like,
idea.
Like, no, man. Like, you know, especially after all that energy and everything else. So the director, Stephen Binder, pulls together the music director and asks him to write a song. And he writes this song that has like a real like a gospel vibe to it, and you can kind of hear the connections between that and Martin Luther King's "If I Have a Dream" speech. And it's got a very, very gospel sound to it. Elvis comes out and he's wearing what? He's in all white
when he records it. Classic.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like the cover of the
– it's a very famous picture of
yeah,
Elvis.
Like
– he's got the Elvis in the background. It says Elvis in red lights.
Yeah.
It's very famous. Him in the white suit with the red tie.
Yeah. And he said like when they were pitching the idea, Tom Parker was still like just being a contrarian to like everything about this show was like, no, this ain't an Elvis song.
That's why, like I said earlier, it sounded like he was just sabotaging this whole thing. You know,
maybe they didn't give him enough money.
Maybe. But what I did hear when Elvis recorded this, he recorded it in the dark and he was like sitting on the floor, like in a fetal position and writing the words down on the concrete. And he sang the song. I read this in Rolling Stone and he wrote all the words down on the concrete and he sang the song pretty much like just with the light on the words.
Hmm.
But then when they recorded, the Colonel came in with his lawyer. Say, okay, so Elf, we're going to play the song. You're signing over the rights to this song now to us.
Oh, my God. Which is, again, just why he's such a scumbag. Let's play a little bit of the song before we get into it. We talk a little bit about it anymore.
We're lost in a cloud with too much rain. We're trapped in a world that's strong.
And he's doing that live.
Right.
Like that's like live on the set.
Right.
He's not lip syncing on or anything.
Yeah. Like no, it's really, I mean, that was when we started this, Ryan, that was the first one you sent me. You were like, watch this. Like, don't listen to it. Watch it.
Yeah. It's him. So powerful. It's become one of my favorite Elvis songs. They featured it in the Searcher HBO special and it's on the TV, the last thing they show, and they have him stand there at the end of the song, and he has his hands up in the air, and he's in Graceland, and they pull back from the living room. It's so ghostly.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and we didn't talk about that documentary, the two-part. Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, it's really
good. Yeah, great. I watched it a couple months ago. I really enjoyed it.
But after Elvis did that, a few months later, he reached out. I can't remember the guys who wrote the song. But he said, you made me realize that I have to trust my gut more than anything when I want to record something. I'm never going to not record something because somebody's not – just because somebody doesn't agree with it. If I feel that this is what I want to be, I'm going to do it. And you listen to that song. This is what he's doing like in Vegas, like this, like these big, powerful songs with the strings behind it and this and that. And he's showing off his voice and the projectile of his voice and all that. And that was like the gateway to what Elvis's career became after the 68 comeback special.
Elvis just took off after that. Yeah. Like, he wanted to be, instead of being on everybody's TV and movie screen, he wanted to be in front of them and performing. And that's what he did best.
Yeah.
Like, fuck those movies.
Yeah.
You know, the best thing that he did was perform. And that's his Vegas shows were unbelievable. You know, up until he started getting big and phoning it in.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when it started getting.
Like physically big.
He was getting physically big.
Yeah.
And he started phoning in the shows, like meaning like he didn't give a fuck anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Elvis did like, you know, 1 year, dude, he did like 340 shows.
He worked his ass off, man.
Yeah.
Kind of probably worked him to death.
He was in between shows when he died.
Yeah.
They were in a break.
It was like the next day he was going back out on the road. So the comeback special came out. That song,
that was a big deal.
The soundtrack went top 10. That song was a like top 12 hit, went gold. That was the first like hit he had in 10 years.
Yeah.
And he was back. And then they said within a week he was back making movies or a month or whatever.
That's crap. Imagine if he like just stayed that way, like that version of Elvis.
Yeah. You know?
Then he came to the realization, like, I got to go get away from all this. I got to get back to
I think he was scared to start something new.
Yeah.
Like, I'm nothing without these movies. And I'm nothing without the Colonel.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the Colonel's almost like Dumbo's magic feather. Like, it's like this codependent relationship.
Kind of like brainwashed.
Totally brainwashed him.
Didn't know that he, he had Stockholm Syndrome. He didn't know that he, what he could do without him. And he, so then the next year he gets the residency in Vegas, and that becomes like the third act of his career with it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's like that song with the powerful, the crooner with the strings.
I heard the Vegas show blew whatever we thought rock and roll from the 68 special blows it away.
See, I had to watch it because in my mind that's like the cartoonish Elvis.
Oh, when Elvis was in Vegas,
the suits and everything.
Those first couple years in Vegas.
Really? I'll have to watch it.
Holy shit. Yeah, he comes out and nails it.
I'll have to watch some
every
of the
night.
Stuff.
Every night he came out and fucking nails it. It was just him doing it over billions and billions of times that got old to him, and that's what the joke became. Elvis in Vegas, he was playing free gigs for the Colonel because the Colonel owed the gambling money.
Yeah.
You know,
but he worked to get that at Vegas point. Man, he worked his ass off to get to that point.
Yeah, he made a lot of movies.
Yeah,
he was a superstar. He was a celebrity,
and he did have. After this special, he did really like Suspicious Minds and In the Ghetto. Yeah. He had a bunch of other hits. Like, but he was kind of back in radio too.
But that was like going to that Vegas thing. That's when what I meant with that song. Like he just started doing songs like in that kind of style, like those big fucking songs. Yeah. You know.
No, big orchestra. Big is a really good way to say it.
Big background big
sound,
singers.
Yeah, big sound
orchestra.
Yeah.
And then I read another quote from Steve Binder. He said he went and saw Elvis much later in his career. And he's like, and I looked at him on the stage and I just knew it was all over.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I'm in my mind, I think he's fat. And that's where
he's burnt out.
It's the joke. It's like the parody Elvis.
Well, it's a circus, man. Get the dancing bear
it
up
was,
there.
It was. They had to announce Elvis has left the building.
Right.
That's how chaotic his shows were.
Yeah. I'll go back and I'll watch some of the stuff, man. Yeah. I always walk out of these episodes with some homework, and I'll do that and check out some of the stuff.
Dude, you see him walk through the crowd and all that, man, and women are just jumping on him crazy. He's kissing every single one of them, too.
Yeah, and then I guess it's just kind of, the drugs and his marriage fell apart and the Colonel and just work, right. The pressure
having,
on
not
him.
Not having hits.
Yeah.
And just doing
just
drugs.
Just crushed him.
Every day, just a mountain full of drugs.
Yeah.
Everybody forgets that. He died a drug addict.
Yeah.
He didn't have a heart attack. He didn't die taking a poop.
Yeah.
He died being a drug addict.
Yeah. The tour of Graceland was glossed over that rather lightly. Like, he went up to his restroom and he passed away. No, that's not the story. But, and that's not how you want to remember him. But,
even in the Vegas thing, like Ryan said, the drugs, like even the band they were playing 2 gigs a night, man.
Oh, they were all, it was the 70s by then.
They weren't allowed to leave the hotel. They were literally in that hotel for like months at a time and not leaving and working every day.
Elvis had control over his mafia.
Yeah.
He was like, you sleep when I sleep kind of thing. And like Elvis never slept.
Yeah.
So they never slept. So they were just all on prescription pills all day, all night, not knowing what time of day it was. Sleeping when the sun's up.
Yeah.
You know?
And it just burned him out, man. He was
he had a hell of a good time.
He's just a space shuttle Columbia just coming back in the atmosphere, man. Just burned up upon reentry. It's really sad. Like what could have been? Like we've said that with several art, Buddy Holly hadn't died or Kurt Cobain hadn't died. Like if Elvis hadn't have been away for 10 years and then had this not happened to him at the end of his life,
what would 80s Elvis be?
I think eventually, luckily, if he had somebody like, I hate to call Rick Rubin the smart dude, maybe he would have went that Johnny Cash route.
Yeah.
He would have started doing other people's songs. Stripped down and like, all right, you're going to do
if
it like
if he never
this.
Died, he probably made a bunch of bad shit like Johnny Cash did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Chicken
that,
in Black.
I like that song.
He would totally.
Well, you like do the clam too.
I know. So did Ryan.
Yeah.
When I like clam, what can I say?
Hey. But I would like to think that Elvis would have had that kind of Johnny Cash career at the end of his life, like Johnny Cash did.
Come full circle back to the stripped down Sun Records kind of sounds.
He would have been the king of rock and roll for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Like that he would have carried the torch.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he would have some kick-ass 4-piece band. Maybe he would have been a Traveling Wilbury. Who knows?
Oh my God. Yeah, dude. You know? That's a good point. Wow.
I just blew your mind. Did I blow your mind?
Maybe after our, we should make our own, like the traveling prisoners or something. Yeah. We make our own super group or something, our own Wilburys. That'd be the traveling McCuskers or something.
No. Nice.
So that'd be funny.
The warden and the traveling.
Yeah.
The warden berries. Is that it on Elvis? You want to move? You got anything else?
No, I say we play one more rockin' song.
All right, let's do it.
Let's play All Shook Up from the Stand Up.
My hands are shaky and my knees are weak. I can't seem to stand on my own feet. Who do you think I want your house? Such luck, I'm in love. I'm all shook up. Oh, please don't ask me what's on my mind. I'm a little mixed up, but I feel fine. And I'm little girl, darling, so my heart beats so it scares me to death. I wish to touch you, my hand. I want to chill.
I just think he brings it.
Yeah, he does.
I'll cut this out, but the costume guy swore that when he walked off that he had cum in his pants.
I heard that too.
Elvis
and he had to They said he did that. He had a spontaneous combustion when he was playing with the guys in his original band, and he only made one of these suits, and then he had to clean it for the second night.
Yeah,
no way.
Yeah,
and he's like, I did the best I could.
I creamed in my pants,
dude. Imagine the life he had. He banged so many girls.
The only thing that can get him off was him fucking rocking.
I don't know.
Maybe rock and roll. Yeah. Right, maybe we leave this in because I was kind of like, all right, that's kind of disrespectful. Who the fuck knows that's true?
Maybe that was like the most satisfaction that he's had because he had every woman in the world by then.
Yeah.
He was like, yo, I'm again once the king of rock and roll. You know, what better feeling could that be?
All right. Let's leave it there, man. I had some notes on like after he died and Tom Parker, and I was like, let's just go out on a good note.
Well,
man.
I think what you said earlier, just to set up how big of a piece of shit Tom Parker was. Why don't you talk
one
about
one more time?
All right. So
shitbag of the week.
Why don't you talk about Elvis's funeral?
All right. So they said immediately after Elvis died, the first thing Tom Parker does, like somebody calls him, and is like, "What are you going to do, man? Elvis has died." He's like, "Nothing. I'm going to keep managing Elvis. Like, it doesn't matter whether he's alive or not." So the first thing he does is he goes to New York City and he meets with the record label and he meets with the merchandising people and he's like, "Dude, you got to start stocking up because everyone's going to want Elvis stuff now, man. This is going to be great. We're going to make so much fucking money." And then he goes to Elvis's funeral and he shows up in a Hawaiian shirt, a baseball hat, and a cigar. And he doesn't go anywhere near the casket. But he does pull Elvis's dad aside, who's mourning and everything,
yeah,
and convinces
sure.
him to sign over the rights to his estate.
He probably said, like, "Hey, listen, this is all over. So you're going to be in the poorhouse.
Elvis owed more money than he had." Right. I'm sure he'll say.
Right. His dad's name was Vernon. He was like, "Vernon, you don't want to burn all this stuff, man. I'll take care of it.
Yeah,
all.
Just sign it all over for this
and, money." You know, and you can look up like I think like at some point the federal government got involved and like sued him.
Yeah, Vernon wasn't a smart dude either. To be honest,
he was a piece of shit too.
Yeah, he
was. Dad. Yeah, they had a weird relationship too.
He was a womanizer and all this shit.
But the hammer kind of fell on Tom Parker. And they said when he died, he was only worth like $1 million. Like compared, like only $1 million. But compared to what he made,
he owed more money.
Yeah,
yeah.
Gambling debts and
I'm sure.
Yeah, total jerk off, man. We could do a whole show on just what a scumbag he was in a relationship.
Well, I hope Tom Hanks makes him look like a shit bear.
I do too. So. All right, man. So that's Elvis. Let me roll on. We got some second thoughts. So the only second thought I really have is around our last episode. So we just want to remind everybody that we want to hear what you think about the 10 artists that we nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You can go to prisonersofrockandroll.com/vote to cast your picks. We think we're going to leave the voting up for a few more times. I did a few more weeks. Excuse me. I did look at it before I came down here, and Ozzy, Motley Crue, and Iron Maiden are in the lead.
Very
cool. Kind of shows who our fans are. It is pretty cool, man. We have as many votes as we have listens for the show. So
that's
everybody
amazing.
Who's listening has been
that's
voting,
great.
Which
that's
is pretty
funny.
Cool. So, and it just hasn't been me in there like voting over and over and over
that's
again.
Cool. Bots.
So
that's cool, man.
Yeah, really cool, man. Really cool that everyone's supporting us. Thanks to everyone who's been voting so far. A couple of our podcast friends have taken the time to shout out by sharing the link with their listeners. The Imbalanced History of Rock and Roll, the It's Rock and Radio podcast out of Chicago. And the Sutlusting Bruce podcast all shared it. So it was pretty cool, man. There people are asking their fans to jump on. Pantheon, too, was sharing it. Music news. I got two things. I guess I got three things. First one, so the music industry continues to react to Russia. So, first, Live Nation Entertainment announced that the citizens of Russia will no longer be able to pay their shitty, quote, convenience fees because the company has stopped all business there. So that came after, like, Green Day, Franz Ferdinand, Slipknot, Iron Maiden, and My Chemical Romance all suspended their concerts. Mm-hmm. The New York Metropolitan Opera announced it will no longer have any musicians that support Vladimir Putin or are supported by Vladimir Putin on their show. The three big record labels, Warner Music, Universal, and Sony, have all suspended operations. And here's the last one. Spotify suspended all 1.5 million premium accounts in Russia and closed its office. Man, if you were like a teenager in Russia. Yeah, man.
Like, it's not their fault, dude. Like, you know.
It's right. Like, again, no rock and roll, man.
Right. You're just some kid that just like, you know, I'm not down with this. Has
nothing to do with anything.
Right.
He just wants to hear his tunes.
Right. Dude. And your Spotify account is suspended and you can't get to any music.
Yeah. It's like that Blacklist thing, man. That was going around like in the 40s or whatever, the 50s or whatever. They start blacklisting people. Man, this is going to keep on going and going and going. And it's like, you know.
Yeah, Russia has a lot of bullshit going.
Yeah, everybody's
going to turn against them.
Yeah.
Not to get political.
Like the concert stuff, I get, man. Like you can't, that's a bad look if you're going to do a show. You'd be like, you're just trying to make money. Absolutely. But it's like the Spotify thing. I was like, dude, to me, that's like virtue signaling. Because again, you're Vladimir, some 18-year-old teenager, and you're sitting in your parents' room in your shitty Eastern Bloc concrete building. You want to listen to some rock and roll, and you don't have that escape. I feel bad for this kid.
Dude, at the same time, but their economy's in the toilet. They're using this as an escape to say, like, well, the ruble's worth like less than like three, like it's
like pennies,
like negative pennies. So this is their way of saying, like, well, they can't afford to pay, so we're just going to come out and say, like, oh, well, we're going to take all of our money out of there.
I feel bad for the young rockers.
Absolutely.
I feel bad for searchers of music.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them out there like us, you know, that use music as an escape.
I didn't even think of that, man. Our potential audience has been cut off from, but you always heard you heard stories, man, like in the early 90s, late 80s, people, like there was like a black market for CD. I think Henry Rollins just talked about this. Like there's always like a black market for like punk albums in Russia and stuff. And cause you couldn't buy this stuff anywhere. Like, you know, countries in the Middle East that are like all oppressed and people would be listening to like Ramones albums in their basement because they're going to get killed if they get caught and shit like that.
It's unreal. How could you even imagine a life like that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's always been like, what's that Russian band? Pussy Riot, the punk, the girls that have been like,
suck.
They've been like arrested before, playing music.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, hopefully those guys get like a Napster thing going on and they can start
they're gonna start
trading music that way.
They're gonna start bootlegging Beatle albums again.
Yeah, bring it back.
Yeah. The Spotify thing really got me.
They're gonna bootleg. That doesn't surprise me though. It's all dollars and cents to Spotify.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Even the Metropolitan Opera was like, all right, man, if you're somebody who supports Putin, okay. You know, if you're Khrushchev banging your shoe on the table, but somebody that Putin supports, I was like, so if he says, like,
oh,
I like this cellist, like the cellist isn't allowed to play there, I don't know, man. Like, don't like me. Yeah. It's the same. That's the fucking people that, like, I'm going to smash all the Russian dressing bottles in the supermarket. Yeah.
Or they think all vodka is made in Russia.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. People just
that
think
makes
they're.
Makes me laugh. Yeah.
All right. So.
Fucking.
Yeah.
Dopey dopes.
Did they get rid of Russian dressing? Did they get rid of Paul Newman's Russian dressing yet?
I got a weird story. So we're going to talk about Nicki Minaj's butt. So this is the type of content that our listeners come here for. So Nicki Minaj admitted that she received injections in her ass several years ago after Lil Wayne made a series of jokes about her backside. Lil Wayne, of course, discovered Nicki Minaj and signed her to his Young Money record label. According to Nicki Minaj, Lil Wayne said, big booties were his muse and said that she thought they were such a big enough part of rap culture that she got injections to make her ass bigger under peer pressure.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, no.
That ass has a life of its own.
That's the stuff I research, man, to bring our listeners every week. And then I guess some breaking news was Dolly Parton today saying that she does not want to be considered to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because she said she's not worthy of it.
That is so punk rock.
Yeah.
Like, she's totally doing what we think.
Yeah. Like, again, she's never recorded a rock and roll song. I get where she's coming from. But you guys said, like, hey, now they'll probably put her in more. And she's like, oh, you know.
If you back away from anything, I think that would be like frowned upon. Like, oh, who is she to turn us down?
Yeah, I think. But I think with her, it's going to make everybody love her more.
Yeah,
I think. Oh, I do.
Yeah,
I was like, I wasn't surprised.
No,
that is,
no,
I'm not surprised. That's at all. The move. That's the Dolly move. Like, to turn down the Hall.
She's a class act.
That's some punk rock shit, dude.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't look at it as an insult to the Rock and Roll of Fame. I just think that she doesn't think that she's worthy of
being.
Well,
she showed them how. Stupid they are.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to put me in a Hall of Fame? That's just plain stupid.
Yeah, she was like, I don't want to split the vote from other artists and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, she did it with, like, Grace and Clash. She wasn't Johnny Rotten saying, you're a piss stain or whatever. So,
y'all just be a piss stain.
Yeah, I did not find any evidence of her ever hanging out with Lemmy from Motorhead, too. I did look. I didn't find anything.
Lemmy didn't climb those hills.
No.
Give me a Jack and Coke.
It's time for the electric chair. The electric chair is a segment we do every episode where we kill a song for being terrible. And we might get some hate mail for this one, man, but we decided this episode we're going to kill Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley.
I do love the song secretly. Not secretly. I'm very verbal about it.
Yeah. No. This is a guilty pleasure for me, and I got the fucking video playing as he's like dancing. I'm just tired of the memes and the jokes, and it's like every
the millennials kind of adopted it, and the generation coming up, and
I don't know. I saw Dave Grohl playing it on stage with him.
I thought it was super cool that he played with him. That he got to sing it.
It was just like, all right, it's finally Foo Fighters worth.
Yeah,
like like the Foo Fighters are covering it,
and it was like the Muppets did something. Yeah. It was like a joke with like Beaker doing it. I don't know, man.
This song's been around for 30 something years, so come on.
It's just
done. Yeah. It's over. Let's have a new joke.
The joke of like, oh, you know, click on this video to see something and then
this will come up. Yeah.
Or, oh, you've been Rick Rolled and it's just kind of like, it's
been
30 years.
Well, Prisoners of Rock and Roll, we just Rick Rolled.
Well, we're going to give you up.
We sentence you to death.
Rock-a-shot.
Gonna pick you up. I'm gonna let you down.
Boom goes the dynamite. So that'll do it for episode 37, man. Thanks to everybody who's been listening to us, whether you've been with us from the beginning or you recently discovered the show. We love you guys. And we'd love it even more if you took a moment to tell somebody about us or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform or check us out on social media. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We post stuff about music all the time, and we love hearing what everybody has to say. You can also find us at prisonersofrockandroll.com, or you can email us at prisonersofrockandroll@gmail.com. We only played 30-second clips of songs on the comeback special, but, dude, go and check out the whole thing, man. You either listen to it or go you can rent the full thing. It's on Amazon Prime. It's on Apple TV. And if you're in Philadelphia, stop by our home base at McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets. Actually, Ryan and Doug, your band is playing there soon, right?
Sure. We're playing on the 26th of March.
High Street Records. Your first show in, like, 2 years, right?
Yeah.
After the pandemic?
It's been, like, 2 years since we've had live music.
Yeah.
Very cool, man.
Live music back at McCusker's.
Awesome. Well, you two will be bringing the thunder with High Street Records. I'll be hanging out as well. I think the Warden will be in attendance too.
He's playing cowbell then.
He's playing tambourine.
All right, everybody, that's it. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Check you later.
Keep on rocking.
Peace out.